Good morning and welcome to Sun Sounds of Tucson, Arizona. Today's date is the 30th of April, 2026. My name is Alan Jones and I will be reading the news today from the Arizona Daily Star. The headlines for today: Judge, no records for DOJ. Comey released after court appearance. Heat relief. Trump again urges Iran to end deadlock and sign deal. And SCOTUS undermines Voting Rights Act provision. Our first story. Judge, no records for the DOJ. Attribution to Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. The Trump administration is not entitled to Arizona's voters' registration records, a federal judge ruled on Tuesday. In a 13-page order, U.S. District Court Judge Susan Bromvich acknowledged that federal law does require states to preserve certain documents related to federal elections, and the law also empowers the Attorney General, as head of the Department of Justice, to demand that they be produced. But Bromvich said there's a flaw in that argument. Arizona State's voter registration list is not a document subject to request by the Attorney General, the judge wrote. Bromvich was no more impressed by a backup argument by the Trump administration. Attorneys for the Department of Justice said that even if voter registration records aren't specifically subject to disclosure, they are entitled to the information based on a broad definition in the Civil Rights Act, which grants access to all records and paper. The judge, however, said that is a misreading of the law. The ruling, in some ways, is not a surprise. Arizona is one of more than two dozen states sued by the Department of Justice in its quest to obtain voter registration records. The ruling in Arizona adds to the five other jurisdictions that already have similar conclusions that the Trump administration lacks authority to demand such documents. Tuesday's ruling is a victory for Secretary of State Adrian Fontes. It was his refusal to hand over the documents in the first place that led to the federal court filing suits against him. Fontes said that some voter registration information already is a public record. That includes things like names, addresses, and party affiliation, and he said that the government is entitled to any of that. But Fontes said much of the information demanded by the Department of Justice is protected by state privacy laws. That includes any part of a voter's Social Security number, driver's license numbers, mother's maiden name, the state or country of birth, an email address and signature. And that, he said, is just for ordinary residents. There is an entirely separate and more comprehensive law covering those in the state's confidentiality program, people like prosecutors and judges, who have obtained a court order shielding anything in the records like their home address from public view. But even if there were not the case, Fontes said there's no basis for the demand. He noted that the Department of Justice never explained how the records it wants would help the agency with its claim that it is looking into whether there are any civil rights violations in Arizona voters' registration system. In fact, in the lawsuit filed in January, the agency claimed it needs the information not as part of any investigation, but instead only to monitor requirements in federal law that state officials do list maintenance to keep voter registration records current and accurate to protect American elections. Fontes, however, has another story. In his own legal filings, the Secretary of State said it appears the real goal is that the federal government wants to amass a national centralized database on millions of Americans in what appears to be a part of a plan to check the immigration status of those on the voter rolls. In a joint prepared statement, Fontes and Attorney General Chris Mays said that Bromvich rightfully dismissed the federal bid to access the information. That database contains the sensitive information of millions of Arizona voters, they said. The court was clear, they continued. The Civil Rights Act does not authorize this demand, and they said they will continue to defend the privacy of Arizona voters against federal overreach. There was no immediate response from the Department of Justice. Our next story. Comey released after court appearance. Attribution to Mike Scalella and Andrew Goodsward of Reuters. Former FBI Director James Comey appeared in federal court in Virginia on Wednesday, a day after being indicted over a social media post that prosecutors allege threatened President Donald Trump. Comey turned himself in on two charges, including threatening the life of the president and transmitting threats across state lines. The former FBI director did not speak during a brief court appearance. His attorney, Patrick Fitzgerald, said he would argue that the case is a vindictive prosecution, meaning that it was brought to punish Comey for exercising his legal rights. A U.S. magistrate judge ordered Comey released and did not impose any special conditions. His next court appearance is expected in North Carolina, where a federal grand jury returned the indictment on Tuesday. Members of Comey's family entered the courthouse shortly before the proceeding began. Comey has said he is innocent and will fight the accusation in court. The indictment marks a renewed push by Trump's Justice Department to target perceived political enemies of the president with criminal prosecution. Trump last year referred to Comey by name in a social media post calling for criminal charges against his adversaries. The charges relate to a post Comey made on Instagram last May showing seashells arranged on a beach to form the numbers 8647. The number 86 is a slang term originating in the restaurant industry that can mean to get rid of or throw someone out. 47 is a possible resemblance to Trump as the 47th U.S. president. The indictment alleged that a reasonable recipient of a message could interpret that as a threat to the president. Comey deleted the post shortly after it was published, saying he viewed it as a political message and was not aware that the numbers were associated with violence. Comey, a longtime Trump foe, has now faced two criminal charges from the Justice Department during Trump's second administration. A previous case accusing him of lying to Congress was dismissed by the federal judge. Trump has for years railed against Comey over his role overseeing an FBI investigation into alleged ties between Trump's first presidential campaign and Russian officials in 2016. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche has moved quickly to carry out Trump's demands for criminal cases after his predecessor, Pam Bondi, was ousted in part for not moving fast enough on them. Since Blanche took over the top post in April, the Justice Department has brought criminal charges against the Southern Poverty Law Center, released a report alleging misconduct in prior prosecutions of anti-abortion activities, and indicted a former National Institute of Health official for allegedly concealing records related to COVID-19 pandemic research. Our next story. Heat relief. Attribution to Arizona Daily Star. Heat relief kits that include items like food and water, sunscreen, liquid IV, lip balm, and women's health products will be distributed across the city as temperatures rise. The kits are the result of a partnership between Tucson's Climate Action Team and the country's health department. Volunteers spent Tuesday morning assembling the items. Our next story. Trump again urges Iran to end the deadlock and sign a deal. Attribution to Reuters. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday urged Iran to get smart soon and sign a deal, following days of deadlock in efforts to end the conflict and a media report that the U.S. would extend its blockade of Iran's ports. In a post on Truth Social, Trump, who has said Iran can call if it wants to talk, and has stressed repeatedly Tehran cannot have a nuclear weapon, and said the country couldn't get its act together. The Wall Street Journal cited U.S. officials as saying the president had instructed aides to prepare for an extended blockade of Iran's ports in a bid to force Tehran to capitulate. officials said that Trump had opted to continue squeezing Iran's economy and oil exports with a blockade as his other options. Resuming bombing or walking away from the conflict carried more risk, according to the WSJ. They don't know how to sign a non-nuclear deal. They'd better get smart soon, Trump said in the Post on Wednesday, without explaining what such a deal would entail. Iran wants some kind of U.S. acknowledgement of its right to enrich uranium for what it says are peaceful civilian purposes. It has a stockpile of roughly 440 kilograms, which is 970 pounds, of uranium enriched to 60%, material that could be used for several nuclear weapons if further enriched. Iranian officials said on Tuesday the country could withstand the blockade as it was using the alternative trade routes and the Islamic Republic did not consider the war being over. The conflict has killed thousands, thrown energy markets into turmoil, and disrupted global trade routes. Iran's most recent offer for resolving the two-month war, suspended since April 8 under a ceasefire agreement, would set aside discussion of its nuclear program until the conflict is formally ended and shipping issues resolved. That proposal did not meet Trump's demand to have the nuclear issue discussed from the outset, however. U.S. intelligence agencies, at the request of senior administration officials, are studying how Iran would respond if Trump were to declare a unilateral victory in the two-month-old war that has become a political liability for the White House, two U.S. officials and a person familiar with the matter told Reuters. Tehran has largely blocked all the shipping apart from its own from the Gulf through the Straits of Hormuz, a choke point for global energy supplies. Since the war began on February the 28th, this month the U.S. began blockading Iranian ships. Trump's Truth Social post features a mock-up image of himself in dark glasses and wielding a machine gun with the caption, "No more Mr. Nice Guy." Hopes of a swift resolution to the conflict have receded since Trump's last weekend scrapped a visit by his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to mediator in Pakistan. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Akkari visited the country twice during the weekend. Since several senior Iranian political and military figures were killed in U.S.-Israeli strikes, Iran no longer has a single, undisputed clerical arbiter at the pinnacle of power, which may be hardening Tehran's negotiating stance. The killing of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei on the first day of the war and the elevation of his wounded son, Murtaza, to replace him as supreme leader has handed more power to hardline commanders of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Iranian officials and analysts say. Trump is under domestic pressure to end a war for which he has given the U.S. public shifting rationales. His approval rating fell to the lowest level of his current term as Americans increasingly soured on his handling of the cost of living and the unpopular war, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll. The poll showed 34% of Americans approve of Trump's performance, down from 36% in the prior survey. Oil prices rose nearly 3% on Wednesday, with the Brent contract hitting a one-month high on concerns that an extended blockade of Iranian ports would prolong supply disruptions. The World Bank on Tuesday forecast energy prices would surge by 24% in 2026 to their highest level since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago, if the most accurate disruptions caused by the Iran war end in May. Our next story. Supreme Court of the United States undermines Voting Rights Act provision. Attribution to John Cruzell and Andrew Chung of Reuters. The U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday undermined a key provision for the Voting Rights Act, raising the bar for racial minorities to challenge electoral maps as racially discriminatory under the landmark civil rights law. In a victory for Louisiana Republican and President Donald Trump's administration. The justice, in a 6-3 ruling powered by the court's conservative members, upheld a lower court's decision blocking an electoral map that had given the state a second black majority congressional district. The lower court had found that the map was guided too much by racial considerations in violation of the constitutional promise of equal protection under the law. The court has a 6-3 conservative majority. The ruling was authored by Justice Samuel Alito and joined by his five fellow conservative justices. The three liberal justices dissented. The Louisiana case involved a central element of the Voting Rights Act. The law, Section 2, was enacted by Congress to prohibit electoral maps that would result in diluting the clout of minority voters, even without direct proof of racial intent. Alito wrote that the focus of Section 2 must now be to enforce the Constitution's prohibition on intentional racial discrimination under the 15th Amendment. Only when understood this way does Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act properly fit within Congress's 15th Amendment enforcement power, Alito wrote. Interpreting Section 2 to outlaw a map solely because it fails to provide a sufficient number of majority-minority districts would create a right that the amendment does not protect, Alito added. Legal analysts said before the ruling was issued that a decision undercutting Section 2 could benefit Republican candidates. The ruling was issued amid a battle unfolding in Republican-governed and Democratic-led states around the country, involving the redrawing of electoral maps to change the composition of congressional districts for partisan advantage ahead of the national congressional elections. Trump's party is aiming in the election to retain the now razor-thin Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate. This provision gained greater significance as a bulwark against racial discrimination in voting after the Supreme Court, in a 2013 ruling authored by conservative Chief Justice John Roberts, gutted a different part of the same law. Justice Elena Kagan, in a dissent joined by the two other liberal justices, said that the ruling will have major consequences. Under the court's new view of Section 2, a state can, without legal consequences, systematically dilute minority citizens' voting power. Of course, the majority does not announce today's holdings that way. Its opinion is understated, even antiseptic. The majority claims only to be updating our Section 2 law, as though through a few technical tweaks, Kagan said. But in fact, those updates eviscerate the law so that it will not remedy even the classic example of vote dilution given above, she added. The Trump administration backed the challenge made in the Louisiana case to the Voting Rights Act, advocating for raising the bar for providing a Section 2 violation. Louisiana, where black people make up roughly a third of the population, has six U.S. House representatives districts. Black voters tend to support Democratic candidates. In a process called redistricting, the boundaries of the legislative districts across the United States are reconfigured to reflect population changes, as measured by the national census conducted every 10 years. Redistricting typically has been carried out by state legislatures once per decade. After Louisiana's Republican-controlled legislature adopted a map that included just one black majority district following the 2020 census, a group of black Louisiana voters sued. A federal judge then ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, deciding that the map likely harmed black voters in violation of Section 2. The state legislature responded by drawing a new map that added a second black majority district. This map prompted a separate lawsuit by 12 Louisiana voters who described themselves in court papers as non-African Americans. They argued that the second black majority district unlawfully reduced the influence of non-black voters like them. white people make up a majority of Louisiana's population. The redrawn map relied too heavily on race in violation of the Equal Protection Principle, a 3-judge panel found in a 2-to-1 ruling, prompting the appeal to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court had rolled back protections under the Voting Rights Act. Its 2013 ruling in a case involving Alabama's Shelby County gutted a Voting Rights Act provision that had required states and locales with a history of racial discrimination to get federal approval to change voting laws. The court, however, ruled a 5-4 in 2023 that a Republican-drawn electoral map in Alabama violated Section 2, siding with black voters who had challenged the map and had sought an additional black majority congressional district. Roberts and fellow conservative justices Brett Kavanaugh joined the court's 3 liberals to form a majority in that decision. The Supreme Court heard arguments in the Louisiana case in October of 2025. It previously had heard arguments in the case in March of 2025, but sidestepped the decision and ordered another round of arguments. Louisiana initially had appealed the 3-judge panel's ruling and argued in March on the same side as the black voters, but the Republican-led state subsequently changed its stance and has urged the justices to effectively eliminate race-conscious redistricting as a remedy for a Section 2 violation. We will now move on to the Tucson and region news. Our first story. Town makes huge water use cuts. Attribution to Clara Miguoya of the Arizona Republic. This small town in Pinal County could have run out of water before July as drought reduced supplies and tightened allocations, but water conservation has bought them time to avert a bigger crisis. Residents and business collectively reduced municipal water consumption by 30% in the past weeks, stretching the town's resources until September. Mayor Curtis Stacy told the Arizona Republic. By then, the town could have more than 2 extra wells running, and they hope monsoon rains to boost the San Carlos Reservoir and increase how much water is available. But they still need a long-term fix. It's the first time Kearney, a town founded in 1958, about 75 miles north of Tucson, has faced a water crisis of this proportion. The town's water comes from the Gila River and is regulated by a federal decree that means it is the first to get cutbacks in times of drought. For decades, Kearney hasn't received its full allotment but has met its needs. This year is different, with the Coolidge Dam at less than 2% of capacity. Kearney was given just 77 acre-feet of water for the whole year. The town's average use is 270 acre-feet, Stacy said. Town officials declared level 1 conservation measures at the start of the year, but water use barely changed. Based on town ordinances, officials implemented level 5 restrictions in April. Watering lawns and landscapes, washing cars or driveways, and filling pools is strictly prohibited in the continued emergency. We're currently using 0.4 and 0.5 acre-feet per day, down from 0.7, said Stacy, adding that the town still needs another week or two of data to make sure that rate is sustained. It is a win for the community. I'm all so proud of what they've done and how they've pulled together and how they spread the word. Many residents are reusing or hauling water from out of town to keep gardens alive, taking shorter showers or doing less washing machine loads. The town, serving some 850 homes, the school district and local businesses, pumps well water close to the Gila River. It could drill new wells to boost its water supply, but only if it is outside the area governed by the federal decree. There are 2 such wells, but one only produces 26 gallons per minute, nowhere close to town needs, and the other is being rehabilitated with money from a federal grant. The second will be up and running by June or July and producing 100 gallons per minute, Stacy said. It's offset, but it won't be enough, he said. for a long-term or permanent solution, the town is talking to lawyers for the mining companies and tribes who have senior rights to the water under the 1935 Globe Equity Decree. Nearby towns are not impacted because they have more senior water rights, have wells outside of the decree area, or are served by a mining company. Kearney's situation is unique. I want to try to solve this permanently for this community, so we're not back here in 10 years or next year, said Stacy, who ran and served as mayor for 2 terms and will leave office this fall. Getting the town to better financial footing than his number one priority, he said. Water has been the focus for the last 7 months. We're also looking at possibly reusing wastewater treatment plants, effluent, as a potable water solution. We are exploring long-term ground storage for water, he said. He declined to give details on the potential partnership to protect ongoing legal negotiations. Kearney residents have had scares with the water situation before. Technical issues with wells have created temporary shortages, and 3 years ago, a glitch in the calculations between the water master and the town prompted restrictions until a numerical error was solved. This time around, it is different. Water levels in the San Carlos Reservoir are at a record low. There is about 18,000 acre-feet of water behind Coolidge Dam, less than 2% of what the reservoir can hold. Last year, it was at 16% capacity. As a result, Kearney got a fraction of its water allotment. Norm and Myra Warren, owners of Norm's IGA, the hometown grocery, said the emergency is scary. They've discussed hauling water from out of town if the crisis continues into the summer. We have 14 commercial-sized compressors that refrigerate all our products, beef, frozen products, and dairy. Those compressors are cooled with a water system, said Norm Warren. If we lose water, our systems will start shutting down. Tens of thousands of dollars worth of inventory of perishable goods will have to go at fire prices. Both grew up in Kearney, floating and swimming in the river. The crisis is odd and new. They don't remember a water shortage in their childhood or a situation as bad as what they are living through right now. The river west of the town is still flowing, but there still isn't enough water behind the dam, and that water is already set aside for other users downriver. On Monday, April the 20th, officials held a town hall to respond to residents' questions and hear their concerns. Myra Warren, who attended with some of the 50 residents, felt their questions were answered. I feel like everybody is doing their part to try to help us, she said. Keep the faith. Across the street, Glitterbomb Salon owner Leanne Jones is also concerned about the future of her life and business in Kearney. She moved from Texas to the town in 2019 after her husband, born in the town, retired from the military. Wayne Cude and his wife are already hauling water from a well outside of town to keep their garden alive, a green haven with fig, olive, and pomegranate trees. In the local newspaper, Copper Basin News, the mayor gave kudos to the couple, now on track to reduce their monthly water use by 10,000 gallons. We're hoping this won't last too long, said Cude, 87, a former teacher and superintendent from the Kearney School District. He moved to town in 1965 and remembers only one other instance of restrictions, but not as severe as this year. Times are different and problems are different, he said. We do our part like everybody else. Carlene Denton, born in the mining town of Ray and a longtime resident of Kearney, wasn't too surprised about the water crisis, but is convinced the town will pull through. This has been an ongoing problem, she said, noting the town always comes last when it comes to Gila River water. We just haven't been in this big of a drought. She connected a hose to the washing machine to send water to her plants and trees instead of the sewer, reuses shower water, and fills jugs out of town when necessary. The drought across Arizona is significant, she said, and this can only make everybody more conscious of it. Stacy, the mayor, was born in Kearney and came back to live in town after working 27 years around the world in mining automation. From its origins, he said, the town brought people together. The mining towns of Ray, Sonora, and Barcelona were abandoned to give way to the integrated community of Kearney. People in Kearney, from his grandfather's generation to his, have been through disasters, floods, and fires way worse than what we're dealing with today, he said. That's the beauty of Kearney. It's a community that's come together when things were pretty damn tough. The Gila River, born in the mountains of New Mexico, used to flow some 600 miles through Arizona, creating wetlands and marshes before emptying into the Colorado River. Today, drought, dams, and diversions for agriculture leave it to dry halfway. Many smaller rivers that once drained into the Gila River are also dry or intermittent. America's first people relied on the river for millennia, as did miners, settlers, and towns after them. As on the Colorado River, water use is the first section of the Gila River is ruled by first in time, first in right, or prior appropriation. The earliest users are, by law, the last to lose water in times of shortages, and shortage there is. Extreme heat, poor monsoon rains, and weak snowpack in the recent years have worsened the situation of many rivers across the West. This year, the mountains feeding the Gila River had 0% to 10% of the snow water they would get in an average winter, according to maps from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Snow has often played a larger role than rain in replenishing aquifers. A University of Arizona report looking at the supply and demand of the Gila River water into 2050 suggests the systems could be in a 31,000 acre foot deficit in a worst case scenario. Like Kearney, other Gila River water users' allotments have been cut because of the low water levels in Coolidge Dam. Farmers in the San Carlos Irrigation and Drainage District in Pinal County will be allotted about 0.2 acre-feet of water per acre of land. Even the most drought-tolerant crops take 10 times as much water. Noah Hiscock, growing grains, alfalfa, and cotton in Coolidge, said it has been the lowest water allotment he has received in his 47 years of farming. Last year was already a record low allotment, 0.6 acre-feet. But this year, the poor hydrology set a new record. It's common that the portion of the water they get is adjusted by the Gila Water Commission later in the year if summer rains are good, said Irrigation District Manager Brandy Ogle. But there would need to be a drastic shift in weather patterns for that to happen. This year, she added, Kearney could also get its 77 acre-feet of water appropriation revised in July. In times of drought like this, higher priority users get their water allotment first, and users down the list get less. The river doesn't get to keep much water. Our next story. Arizona GOP lawmakers move ahead with a plan. Attribution to Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. Governor Katie Hobbs said Tuesday she wants to put the proposed $17.9 billion Republican budget behind her so that the real negotiations can begin. But she would not say outright that she will veto it. We'll see if they have the votes to pass it, she said. I don't know that's the case. So far, though, the voter appears there. But hours after the governor's comments, the Senate and House Appropriations Committee approved the package of 9 bills that make up the state budget. That sets the stage for a final action on Wednesday in the Republican-controlled legislature. Tuesday's committee votes came over the objections of Democrats who said the cuts from the $18.7 billion spending plan proposed in January by Hobbs will impact needed services. I think children will be suffering, said Senator Leila Alston, a Phoenix Democrat. Elderly will be suffering. everyday Americans will not have the opportunity that they have had in the past for health care or food or everyday necessities. Tempe Democrat Senator Mitzi Epstein said these cuts from Hobbs' proposal are unnecessary. She said there was no reason for Arizona to mirror all of the tax cuts in last year's federal Big Beautiful Bill, particularly those that benefit businesses. But Phoenix Republican Matt Gress said Hobbs is deluding herself if she thinks that by vetoing this budget, she will be able to negotiate something more to her liking. Republican Justin Olson, a Mesa Republican, said it is wrong for Democrats to claim the GOP plan is in any way a cut in the budget. He pointed out that the overall spending plan for the coming fiscal year would be about $300 million more than the current state budget. Olson said state spending is outstripping inflation and population growth. There is a significant amount of spending in this budget, he said. We are not cutting spending. That is true on an overall broad basis, but Democrats said it isn't true across the board. It reduces affordable housing funding in the middle of a housing crisis, said Representative Mariana Sandoval, a Goodyear Democrat. And it takes $100 million from our public universities, pushing tuition further out of reach, she said. The GOP plan would cut 5% from the budgets of most states' agencies, including K-12 education, and those not dealing with public safety. Also, some dollars for universities included in the budget for the current year are not being renewed. None of those cuts are in the governor's budget proposal. The reason for that, however, is simple. Hobbs built her spending plan on more money being available. Some would come from the decision to mirror tax cut provisions in the federal bill. Hobbs was willing to go along with some, notably raising the standard deduction, eliminating state income tax on tips and overtime, and adding a tax break for seniors. But Arizona's GOP lawmakers also included various provisions in the federal bill designed solely to help businesses, cutting another more than $100 million a year in state revenues. Epstein said there's a flaw in the state simply copying what was decided by Congress. The federal budget can do these bad policies because they just print more money, she said. Noting the Congressional Budget Office says all those tax cuts will push the federal deficit to more than $4 trillion in the next decade. But Epstein pointed out that's not an option in Arizona, where the state is required to enact a balanced budget every year and constitutionally prohibited from running a deficit. During the debate, Chandler Republican Representative Jeff Weniger chided Democrats who said repeatedly that lawmakers were approving a plan to help corporations. He said there's more to it, as there are restaurants and small businesses in his district that also will be able to take advantage of some of the changes in the tax code. They are the ones who will be benefiting from this, he said. They're not a big corporation. There's more to the Republican plan than simply conforming to the federal tax code. For example, the governor's proposed budget plan included eliminating tax breaks for data centers, a move that would save the state about $38.5 million a year, money that could be used for other programs. GOP lawmakers, however, want to keep it. Tempe Democratic Senator Lauren Kuby said that's a mistake. Arizona should not be subsidizing big tech, especially as electricity prices rise and tech profits soar, Kuby said. Instead of giving more tax breaks, we should be closing loopholes, protecting consumers, and lowering costs for our energy-burdened residents, not shifting the burden onto them. And Representative Stephanie Stahl Hamilton, a Tucson Democrat, said this particular tax break that Republicans like undermines the claim they are interested in helping small businesses. There are no mom-and-pop data centers, she said. Hobbs also hoped to free up an extra $89 million to spend on other programs, by limiting vouchers for private and parochial schools only to children from families earning less than $250,000 a year. Republicans have pronounced that a non-starter. And her plan also includes some increases in taxes and fees, all of which were rejected by GOP leaders. All that comes back to what happens next. We're monitoring that situation, Hobbs said Tuesday, of Republicans advancing their spending plan. I'm hopeful that we can get back to the table and start having real conversations about a budget that works for Arizona. Kress, however, had a message for Hobbs, who walked away from the negotiations last month. If she thinks the Republican budget will simply be a starting point for new talks, you are mistaken, he said. Whoever gave her the advice to walk away from the table, you gave up incredible amounts of any impact and leverage that you had because you now have a unified Republican caucus in both the House and Senate, Kress said. And we are going to be very insistent on keeping 95%, if not 99%, of this package intact. Our next story. Pentagon, treat Kelly like other troops. Attribution to Ronald J. Hansen of the Arizona Republic. Senator Mark Kelly remains a member of the military and should be held to the same rules regarding his public speech as any other active duty member. The government countered in legal papers ahead of a key court hearing next week. The April 27th filing in the U.S. Court of Appeals for Washington, D.C., offered the Pentagon's response to Kelly's own legal arguments over the illegal orders video and snowballed into an effort by other service members who counseled disobedience to lawful orders. The legal distinction is central to Kelly's legal battle with the Pentagon. In November, he and five other congressional Democrats released a viral video that reminded service members they must disobey illegal orders, that they have been a long-standing military policy safeguarded by legal rulings. But the timing of the message wrapped it in political overtones. It happened as the Trump administration put the military on a more aggressive posture worldwide, including with strikes on suspected drug boats in international waters. The Democrats have never said what, if any, orders should have been disobeyed. The government has argued throughout its case with Kelly that his words have undermined the authority of the Pentagon. It contends the same message from someone on active duty would not survive legal scrutiny. Kelly, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, which has oversight of the military, has argued that his views of the military are protected speech and are heightened by his membership in Congress, which has its own ability to weigh in on issues of public concern. But Kelly has long argued that the case is about more than his own free speech rights. Six different groups, ranging from retired senior officers to the libertarian Cato Institute, have filed court papers outlining their own arguments for siding with Kelly. They have framed the issue as potentially chilling free speech for every veteran who might criticize the Pentagon's policies. Kelly and the other five Democrats have faced Trump's ire since they published the video in November. On February the 10th, a federal grand jury in Washington, D.C., refused to criminally indict all six of them in another rebuke to the Trump administration. In rulings for Kelly, Leon noted that active duty service members have long had less vigorous First Amendment protection to ensure orders in the military. Unfortunately for Secretary Hegseth, no court has ever extended those principles to retired service members, much less a retired service member serving in Congress and exercising oversight responsibility over the military, Leon wrote. This court will not be the first to do so. Our next story. University of Arizona to hold a public forum on name of Cesar Chavez building. Attribution to the Arizona Daily Star. The University of Arizona will hold a public forum on Thursday to discuss the name of the Cesar E. Chavez building on campus after a New York Times investigation in March revealed Chavez, leader of the farm workers' civil rights movement, sexually abused girls and women. The public forum, 4 p.m. Thursday at the Manuel Pacheco Integrated Learning Center is part of a review of the building's name being conducted by the university's Naming Advisory Committee. The review was initiated by University of Arizona President Suresh Garamella, according to the University of Arizona's news release on Tuesday. This forum is part of the process and is intended to provide an open space for dialogue and reflection, said the release. Input gathered at the public forum will help inform the committee's recommendations. The discussions will include perspectives on the farm workers' movement, community impact, support for survivors, and considerations for next steps. In the Times investigation, two women told the newspapers that Chavez began sexually abusing them when they were 12 and 13 years old, in the 1970s. Dolores Huerta, who co-founded United Farm Workers of America with Chavez, disclosed to the Times that he raped her in the 1960s. Leaders in states and cities, including Tucson, and many other institutions quickly renamed holidays and altered memorials honoring Chavez, the Arizona-born civil rights icon who died in 1993. We will now move on to the nation and world news. Our first story. Gibraltar's monkeys eat soil to avoid bellyaches. Attribution to Marta Serafinko of Reuters. On the tourist-packed rock of Gibraltar, one of the most common sights is monkeys begging for food and sometimes stealing sweet and salty snacks from unsuspecting visitors. Scientists now have documented an unusual behavior among these macaques that may help them ward off a bellyache from all of this junk food. Researchers say the monkeys have been observed eating soil more frequently, a behavior they say may help the macaques avoid stomach upset from consuming human snacks. They found that soil eating was more common in groups of monkeys that consumed more food from tourists, including chocolate, crisps, and ice cream, items high in sugar, fat, and dairy, and low in fiber. We propose the idea that human food, being not adapted to their natural diet, triggers upset stomachs and potentially microbiome disruption, of which negative effects are buffered by the soil, said Sylvian Lemieux, a biological anthropologist at the University of Cambridge in England, and lead author of the study published last week in the journal's Scientific Reports. It compared to something in humans soil eating, likely acts as antacids, Lemieux said, adding that more research is needed to understand its effects on gut bacteria. The researchers tracked Barbary macaques living in Gibraltar, a British territory at the southern tip of Spain, between August of 2022 and April of 2024. The macaques, around 230 animals across 8 groups, comprise the only free-ranging monkey population in Europe. The monkeys live in close contact with the hordes of tourists who visit the site. Tourists often feed the monkeys or have their snacks stolen, despite the animals also receiving fruits, vegetables, and seeds at a designated feeding platform managed by local authorities. Barbary macaques, native to North Africa, are thought to have arrived in Gibraltar during medieval Moorish rule. They later became a symbol of British control after legend has it that they helped alert troops to an 18th century surprise attack. Their population later dwindled during World War II, prompting British leader Winston Churchill to order simian reinforcements from Morocco and Algeria, animals from which most of today's macaques are believed to have descended. The deliberate consumption of soil, chalk or clay, is called geophagy. It is seen across many animal species, including primates such as chimpanzees, lemurs, and other macaques. We don't know the exact action of soil within the gut, but soils, particularly those rich in clay, are known to alleviate gut pH acidity, absorb toxins, plaster the stomach, and modify microbiome composition, Lemoyne told Reuters. I would not say that soil helps digest junk food, but that likely helps them feel better during a rough digestion, Lemoyne added. Researchers documented 46 instances of geofagry across the Gibraltar monkey population. The behavior was especially common in areas with heavy tourist traffic and peaked in the summertime, when visitor numbers are highest. While one group of monkeys with no access to human food showed no soil eating at all, they said. The study suggests the behavior may be socially learned. Different groups of monkeys favor specific types of soil, and most soil eating occurs in the presence of other macaques, giving younger individuals a chance to observe and copy. The findings show how primates can adapt to changing environments in ways similar to humans and learn these behaviors from one another, Lemoyne added. Lemoyne noted the findings could influence tourist behavior, potentially helping discourage illegal feeding. However, there are concerns it could have the opposite effect if visitors expect to be able to trigger unusual behavior. There is no systematic association between immediate junk food consumption and subsequent soil eating. It happens that way in some cases, but generally they don't immediately eat the soil after having some human food, Lemoyne said. Our next story. Hegseth, Iran war, no quagmire. Attribution to Reuters. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth sought to defend the Iran war in fiery remarks to Congress on Wednesday, saying it was not a quagmire and attacking Democratic lawmakers as feckless for criticizing the unpopular conflict. Hegseth was testifying before Congress for the first time since the U.S. and Israel launched a war against Iran on February the 28th that has led to a surge in gasoline prices. Trump's popularity has taken a pounding since the conflict, and just 34% of Americans approve of the U.S. conflict with Iran, down from 36% in mid-April and 38% in mid-March, the Reuters Ipsos poll found. Democrats peppered Hegseth with questions about the open-ended conflict, with Representative John Garamendi of California calling it a quagmire and a political and economic disaster at every level. Hegseth responded angrily, "You call it a quagmire, handing propaganda to our enemies. Shame on you for that statement," Hegseth said in response to Garamendi, and slammed reckless, feckless, and defeatist congressional Democrats. "Don't say I support the troops on one hand and then 2 months mission in a quagmire. Who are you cheering for here? Who are you pulling for?" Our next story. GOP pushes bill to fund the ballroom. Attribution to Richard Cowan of Reuters. Just days after a shooting at a dinner that President Donald Trump attended, Republicans in Congress are pushing for legislation to fund and speed construction of a White House ballroom, claiming increased security concerns. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and two fellow Republicans quickly crafted a bill to mainly finance the construction, which already is underway at taxpayers' expense. "I'd like the vote as soon as possible to accelerate what America needs, a secure facility for the president and others to meet in, to have a good time, to enjoy themselves without putting the nation at risk," Graham told reporters, adding that underneath the ballroom would be a lot of military stuff. Graham said private donations could be used for buying China and stuff like that, of the $400 million. Graham said $332 million would be taxpayer funds that he said would be paid for by using customs fees on imported goods. "I've never felt the sense of threat that exists today," Graham said, arguing that Trump would not have to leave the secured White House grounds for large events being held in Washington. Neither Trump nor the White House hosted Saturday's dinner, which had about 2,600 guests. Trump already tore down the historic East Wing of the White House to begin construction of a massive White House ballroom, which would seat a maximum of 1,000 guests. Trump previously claimed private donations would pay for the estimated $400 million cost of the ballroom project that he demanded. Graham said he wants a vote on a standalone ballroom funding bill, but if that is defeated, he said he would consider an alternate route. He did not rule out trying to put the $400 million in a bill Republicans are pushing that would circumvent the need for Democratic support in the narrowly divided Senate. Republican Representative Chip Roy of Texas said in a social media post Sunday that a budget bill Graham and Republicans are pushing through Congress should include the ballroom. That measure, under a special procedure allowing passage by a 51-vote majority instead of a 60-vote supermajority, most bills face, Republicans hold 53 of the Senate 100 seats. That bill is mainly aimed at funding two Department of Homeland Security law enforcement agencies through the fiscal year of 2029. On March the 31st, a federal judge ruled that the 90,000-square-foot project could only go forward if Congress approved it. On Sunday, freshman Republican Senator Tim Sheehy of Montana said he would seek fast Senate approval of a bill providing for construction of Trump's ballroom. His move would require the consent of all senators, a procedure that often fails on controversial legislation. So far, Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania is the only Democrat in the chamber who publicly indicated his support for the ballroom. Some House Republicans also drafted legislation to ensure completion of Trump's project. On Saturday night, Trump was scheduled to deliver a speech at the annual dinner of the White House Correspondents' Association. The event ended abruptly after a man was apprehended inside the hotel where the event was held and he allegedly fired shots at a U.S. Secret Service agent. Shortly after the shooting, Trump held a news conference in the White House and said security concerns were more justification to continue building his ballroom. This brings us to the end of today's broadcast of the Arizona Daily Star. This is Alan Jones signing off.